news and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Good to be with you again, Paul, on this gorgeous first Friday of August. What a beautiful day.
I love the weather. Up at my farm, I open all the windows upstairs, and I sleep the sleep of the dead. It's cool. It's like you're camping, you know. And then during the day, it's in the 80s. I could go out and play at the farm.
Or you can go painting.
Hey, I'm going to start painting now. I've got to paint the outbuildings. I'm fully employed as a retired person.
And don't invite me up to help you on that one.
Oh,
okay.
I was going to ask you today, Dennis.
It was a gorgeous night last night, and I know you were there at the Central Iowa Symphony down at Banshell Park, and it was a gorgeous night and a big crowd, and what a beautiful concert. Huh?
You know, I love hearing strings. Of course, we've had the municipal band concert all season for June and July, but it's a treat to hear the strings, and I really love the fact that they're a good-sized group, a lot of people and all age groups, and gives them an opportunity to acquaint everybody with their concert season coming up in October and December and all those months.
And Eric McIntyre leading that group last night, a fine show. Thanks, everybody, for showing up, and thank you, Central Iowa Symphony. Hey, we have a good show in the works today, Paul, a great show. Just a couple of minutes from now, a few minutes, we'll talk with the editor of the Ames Tribune, Michael Crum, about the state of American journalism today and about some of the important issues right here in Ames.
And then later, Susan Guiazda, the city's public relations manager, joins us with her monthly look at upcoming events, both interesting and important around town. First, Dennis, take a look at the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
And there was plenty of news in the Trib last week, and frankly, Paul, the pressure's on me to get this all correct today, even more so than usual, because this is the first time I can remember that the editor of the paper is sitting right next to us when I do the news. So, Michael and Paul, here goes. I'll try to get this right. On Saturday, the Trib reported that Ames City Councilmember Tim Garten had announced his plans to seek re-election on Friday. Garten has been on the council since 2014. He said he wants to enhance the quality of life for everyone around these parts. Saturday also brought word about a longtime downtown Ames business that is peddling its way across town. Bicycle Plus at 411 Kellogg's going to lock its doors for the last time in the next few weeks. It's moving to its corporate headquarters, which already houses its bike service center at 2105 Southeast 5th Street. That's in East Ames. One more note from Saturday, a story about an Ames native who is about to publish a memoir about growing up around here in the 70s. Cheryl Stritzel McCarthy's new book is called Many Hands Make Light Work, and in it she describes growing up with four sisters and four brothers in the family home on Welch Avenue. Her dad was an Iowa State University professor, her mom minded the home, and they all worked together to renovate and rent houses to students at the university. Sunday brought word about a new Iowa law that established a children's behavioral health system locally, along with the statewide board. That law makes each school district provide an hour of training to faculty members to help students who might be in trouble. Here in Ames, the high school administered a day-long mental health first aid session last spring, and in addition, the school district hired two new social workers who will serve the elementary schools. Also Sunday, a long takeout in the Trib about Carrie Chapman Catt. She graduated from Iowa State University back in 1880 and went on to found the League of Women Voters. And she played a leading role in the campaign for the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's the one that gave women the right to vote. Her name is on a prominent building on the Iowa State campus. The question the Trib story raises is, how fair is it to judge figures from the past through a modern-day lens? The question comes up because Catt has been linked on the Internet to terms such as white supremacy and racism, and the authenticity and accuracy of those sources have been debated for decades. It's a complex story. You can read all about it in Sunday's Ames Tribune. One more note from Sunday about 13-year-old Ames resident Grace McCunn, who's raised thousands and thousands of dollars for Blank Children's Hospital in Des Moines. Well, she did it again on Saturday, raising $15,000 more for the hospital through her third annual Amazing Grace Lemonade Race at Ada Hayden Park. Tuesday brought word about a month-long construction project in Ames that's going to affect lots of drivers near Iowa State University, so listen up. That project began on Monday at Lincoln Way and Highland Avenue. It's going to replace the traffic signal at that intersection and upgrade pedestrian ramps. Those ramps are going to have new red warning panels. There will also be push buttons at the light to tell pedestrians to either wait or go, and also tell them how much time is left for them to cross the street. I guess we need that. While all this is being put in, the intersection is going to stay open, but guess what? There are going to be temporary lane closures, and that's going to cause delays for all of us drivers. Also, word Tuesday that Ames City Councilmember Bronwyn Beattie Hansen had announced she's going to run for re-election, said she wants to continue being a local presence in what she called the fight of our time, climate change. And on Tuesday, a report that two Democratic presidential hopefuls are going to make their way to Story County in coming days. Former Pennsylvania Congressman Joe Sestak planned to make a campaign stop at the Farm Grounds coffee shop in Nevada tomorrow, Saturday. And then 1 week from tomorrow, Montana Governor Steve Bullock is going to come to the Main Street Farmers Market right here in Ames before he also heads to the Farm Grounds coffee shop in Nevada later that day. Plenty of news in Wednesday's paper, including a report about a mobile home fire in Nevada that sent one child to a hospital. Fire broke out at the Home Acres Mobile Home Court on 10th Street on Monday night. And again, that's in Nevada. Firefighters said the mobile home suffered major damage in the blaze. It was caused by an aging electrical circuit that overloaded. A child inside was taken to a hospital with smoke inhalation, but was released later. That's good news. Also Wednesday, word that Story County supervisors had approved giving the Heart of Iowa Regional Transit Agency, or HRTA, more than $6,500 to restore some busing services for seniors. As you know, HRTA provides services in Story, Boone, Dallas, Jasper, Madison, Marion, and Warren counties. The agency has had funding cuts in recent years from both state and federal sources. Wednesday also brought word that progress is being made on a $3 million restoration project at Hickory Grove Lake, southwest of Colo. That lake and most of its amenities are closed this year while work continues. Project includes draining and restoring the lake, something that became necessary because of high bacteria levels and soil problems. 55,000 yards of sediment have to be removed. The project also includes restoring a proper fish habitat, the expansion of the lake's north and south boat ramps and the parking area, and improvements to the beach area, including construction of a new beach house. All of this expected to be finished by next spring. One more note from Wednesday, the announcement of the lineup for the upcoming 9th Annual Maximum Ames Music Festival. That's a 4-day event starting Thursday, September 6th. It features about 60 acts performing at 9 Ames venues, including this very radio station. Performances will cover a lot of musical territory. You can read all about it in Wednesday's Trib. Yesterday's paper had some good news indeed for drivers in and around Ames. It was word that the ongoing project to construct a new interchange at I-35 and Highway 30, that's about 90% complete, and that construction should be done sometime next month. That construction is going to replace the cloverleaf design that is now in place and reduce the amount of traffic caused by drivers crossing in and out of lanes to get into or off of the highways. Project started more than 2.5 years ago, and as you might recall, got delayed when some rather serious issues were discovered. Also a story yesterday about the statewide law enforcement crackdown on Tuesday involving drivers distracted by their phones or who were not buckled up. The Ames Police Department and the Story County Sheriff's Office took part. By day's end, they had stopped and cited 11 drivers for not wearing seatbelts and 16 who were driving while they were texting. That is a no-no. Also yesterday, word that a Story County jury found a Davenport man not guilty in connection with a robbery in Ames. 30-year-old Gary Griffin was accused of taking part in that robbery at an apartment on Coconino Road. Also a story about Iowa's annual sales tax holiday, which takes place today and tomorrow. It's a good deal for shoppers, so listen closely. If you're looking for such things as clothing, you won't have to pay the state's usual 6% sales tax on qualifying items that are priced less than $100. Now, that exemption will not apply to such things as jewelry, sporting equipment, or umbrellas, but we probably won't need umbrellas for the next week or so around here. One more front-page story of note yesterday, and this one written by none other than the Trib's editor, Mr. Michael Crum. It's about the newest housing development in Huxley, a 76-unit project built just off First Street on the city's east side. The units have 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, along with a 1-car garage and a laundry room. So far, about 25 units have been leased. Today's paper has word about another Democratic presidential candidate coming to the area. Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan is going to show up at Time Out Nevada at 6:45 tonight. Also a story that the federal government has awarded SciRide in Ames more than $1.5 million to replace some of its diesel buses with ones that run on electricity. Also word that Staybridge Suites is going to become the latest hotel on the east side of Ames. The 84-unit hotel is being built on Isaac Newton Drive, going to be the 11th lodging unit alongside the Southeast 16th Street intersection. And one more note. After 75 years, Army Corporal Ralph Bennett finally came home yesterday. Bennett was an Ames native and World War II soldier who was killed in battle in Burma. He was not identified for more than 7 decades until this past April. The flight carrying his remains landed at the Des Moines Airport yesterday, and a military honor guard brought his casket to Ames. Tomorrow has been declared National Ralph Bennett Coming Home Day by the city and by Story County. His burial service is going to take place at 11 tomorrow morning at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. And the American Legion Post is asking residents to honor Corporal Bennett by lining 9th Street between Grand Avenue and the cemetery, starting at 10:30. Again, Grand Avenue and the cemetery on 9th Street. Line that street. It's a fine idea to honor Corporal Bennett, and we will see you there. And that is our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And, Paul, that could be a very emotional, will be a very emotional day tomorrow along 9th Street and at the cemetery.
Oh, you know, that's one of the greatest things about DNA technology.
Yeah.
And what we have to realize is there will never again be an unknown soldier.
Yeah.
Never again. Well, very appropriate after your news segment to bring on Michael Crow, the editor of the Ames Tribune.
The man who had all those stories put in the paper that we just read.
Yes.
Did I do okay on reading that?
You did great. Grace McCune is how you pronounce her last name.
Oh, well, now the Ames School District said Ames, McCune. They were wrong.
We've always pronounced it McCune.
All right. She's that's 13-year-old girl.
She's a phenomenal young lady.
Yeah. What is she? What's her second act, though? What does she do when she's 18 or 25?
I think Grace will accomplish whatever Grace wants to accomplish.
Amazing Grace,
she
indeed.
She did, literally.
That's good. Very good, Dennis. Michael, welcome. And
first of all, happy to be here.
I just think that it might be interesting for our audience to know who owns the Tribune and what your structure is and your relationship with papers and surrounding communities.
Sure. Happy to do that. First of all, the Ames Tribune and its affiliated papers here in Central Iowa were owned by a company called Gatehouse Media, which is actually based out of Texas, but it's part of part of a larger company called New Media Inc., which is out of New York City. The company is mammoth in size. It has hundreds of papers and shoppers and other publications throughout the country. I think it is actually the largest company as far as the number of properties throughout the country. But it's right up there with some of those other big newspaper media company giants.
And explain the relationship the Trib has with some outlying newspapers, the Story City Herald, the Tri-County Times,
Sure, you bet. We are all owned by Gatehouse, and we work very closely with them, particularly the other papers here in Story County, the Story City Herald, the Nevada Journal, and the Tri-County Times. We, several years ago, just realized that it made sense for all of us to work closer together and to have more collaboration because we realized that there was a lot of duplication of services, so to speak, where we found that maybe Marlis Barker, the editor of the Nevada Journal, was covering something, and so was someone from the Ames Tribune. Mm-hmm. Well, there was no reason for us to double up on coverage on those sorts of things. So we've really worked to kind of streamline it from that perspective so that we really can provide a broader level of coverage to all of the publications. Marlis Barker is the editor who oversees both the Nevada Journal and the Tri-County Times. Rana Faberg is the reporter up in for the Story City Herald. We also have a relationship with the Boone News Republican over in Boone and the Perry Chief and the Dallas County News down in the Perry-Dallas County area.
Well, the great thing is these papers still exist and they still have the local flavor. Now, I live in Story City, and since that transition, the paper's much slicker, more color photography. I'm just very impressed with what's happened, and it's so good that the Story City Herald still exists. And one thing I want to say, Michael, I love the Tribune. I read it every day. And really, it's local journalism at its best. I like the section where you say, what you might have missed at the city council, what you might have missed at the school board, what you might have missed at the supervisor. That's the role of local journalism, to write herd on local government entities and report what's happening.
Through the course of time, we've all seen media across the board, newspapers, radio, television. They've all evolved and really worked to keep pace with not only the technological changes, but also just the habits of consumers. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we realized a couple, 2-3 years ago now probably, was that the traditional going to cover a school board or city council meeting, if there isn't a big issue on the agenda – or there isn't something controversial happening, readers were not taking the time to read the traditional 600-700-word meeting recap. And we realized that it works both very well in print and in digital. Those sort of snippets where it's like, here's five things you need to know from last night's city council meeting. Here's what you may have missed from this week's school board meeting. Kind of the more shorter paragraph form, bullet item presentation. It's easier for readers to consume both in print and in digital. And really, I just think it's quicker in today's fast-paced world where everyone seems so busy and everyone's on their phone or looking at their laptop or tablet, being bombarded by all the different alerts and notifications. It's just an easier, more digestible way for people to consume the news.
There's no question about the importance of newspapers, local communities. You're the only entity in this community that covers the council, the supervisors, the school board meeting, Iowa State University on a regular basis. But print journalism's under pressure. Circulation's been declining as people get their news in different ways. What's the future of print journalism? What's the current status of print journalism? What's the future?
So to look at this, you really need to kind of look at all the things that go into putting a paper out every day.
Mm-hmm.
People see the paper and they see the news and they see the stories that are in it, or they look at our website and see the stories that we posted online, or they link to us through all the different social media platforms we use, the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Instagrams. And they kind of forget that it also, like, how does the paper get to you? Once that is printed, oh, by the way, it has to be printed. If we're talking about the physical paper, then how does that physical paper get delivered to you, the customer? And that's changed and evolved over the years, probably as a result of some very tragic things that happened in Des Moines, 30, 40 years ago. But newspapers are challenged with finding carriers to deliver that paper. A lot of newspapers have really gone to mail delivery, at least some, if not all, days of the week. The Tribune and its weeklies that we're affiliated with, we do mail delivery Monday through Friday, and we do carrier delivery still on the weekends. However, you know, we're in a business of being, as you know, of asking people to be honest and people to be transparent, so we feel that we should be as well. We've had some challenges with that over the past several months and really the past year or so, probably, because it is getting more and more difficult to find people who are willing to make that commitment to be a carrier. I know I'm not that much younger than you guys, but
you just look younger. That's
the best compliment I've had this morning.
I don't feel any younger, but I'll tell you this. I grew up at a time when a lot of my friends delivered our hometown paper, and it used to be that—
It was a boy's job.
It was a boy's job, and it would be, you know— whatever the age was that you could start. I mean, 10, 11, 12, definitely by the time you were a teenager, you were getting up in the morning and you were throwing papers. If
sure.
you lived in a town that had an afternoon paper, you'd pick them up after you got off of school and mm-hmm. you'd go throw papers.
Sure.
Those days are gone. So we now rely on adults. Sometimes this is a second job. Sometimes it may be an only job. And it's just getting more and more difficult to find people who are willing to do it. We hire them on a contract basis, so we pay them a stipend to do it, an agreed-upon fee that they sign in a contract. And but that gets to be a lot of wear and tear on your car.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the Gosch family in West Des Moines.
Yes.
And when Johnny Gosch mm-hmm. was kidnapped, everyone got protective about letting
right.
their boys do paper
runs.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a trend. But before we get to anything else, Michael, I want to compliment you on your wonderful editorial page. You have a good balance between left and right, and you publish David Brooks, one of my favorite people. And I just think your editorial page stands out. It's really good, and I really like the choices you
make. I think Paul
make.
Wants you to buy him breakfast today. That's why he just said that.
No, it's really it's good. I like it better than yes. the Des Moines Register.
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, and I think when I've been on here in the past, I've talked a little bit about that. And when I became editor, I'd heard that previous editors, really going back years and years and years and years and years, that they wore their personal political leanings on their sleeve, and that was evident in what appeared on the opinion page. And the only place my opinion, and it's really not mine, it's the opinion of the institution of the Ames Tribune, the only time that that is ever evident on the page is when we do an editorial or if I write a personal column. Otherwise, we made the very, very conscious decision that we wanted to reach out and try to appeal to as many people in town as we could. Ames, yes, it is a Democratic kind of liberal stronghold of this part of the state, at least, and particularly in the 4th Congressional District. But that doesn't mean everybody in Ames is a Democrat, conservative, progressive, whatever title you want to give them. We have a lot of people who are conservative. We have a lot of people who are Republican in this area. And we don't want to completely alienate them. And when I made that decision, I actually, within, I think, a two-day period, took two phone calls. One complained because they were tired of the continued, in their mind, liberal slant of the Ames Tribune and its opinion page. Within 24 hours, I took a call from someone who was upset about the sudden shift to conservatism that they were reading on the page.
That means you're doing everything right.
And that's when I kind of leaned back in my chair and I said, apparently I'm doing my job.
That's one of the things I'm concerned about because, you know, people get a lot of their – and there are a lot of people who get their news from Facebook.
Yeah.
And then you've got a lot of biased material on the cable channels. And I think one of the more – remarkable trends that's really changed things is the 24-hour segment on the cable news. And a lot of these outlets are biased. And when someone tells me something they read on Facebook, I always ask them, was an editor involved? Or is that someone in their pajamas? You know, if you have a newspaper or if you're CBS News, there's an editor. Dan Rather lost his job, not because the story was inaccurate, but because he didn't credentialize the story and his sources. He was made $8 million a year, and he got fired because he violated journalistic rules.
Let's talk about trust in the news media. It's eroded greatly over the years, a lot of it because President Trump has continued to rail about fake news in the mainstream news media. How much do you think his railings over the term of his presidency have eroded the ability of Americans to trust ABC, NBC, CBS, the New York Times, the Ames Tribune?
I think that has had a greater impact on the national media than the local media. We occasionally run into a little bit of that pushback. You know, when someone reads something that they disagree with, it's not factually wrong. It's just that they disagree with something in the Ames Tribune, that it's fake news. That happens very seldom here at this level. I think that has had a much larger impact on the national media. I will say this, and this gets back to local journalism. It's important because we have people that are in the community. We have people that go out and sit down across the table from people. Sources get to know the reporters get to know the sources, so you build that relationship, you build that level of trust that when we have and I'm going to give you some really good examples. You mentioned three presidential candidates coming to town here over the next week. Mm-hmm. With those candidates comes national media attention. And those national reporters swoop in, they're here for that hour or two and they're gone. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody really has a conversation with them. And so local journalism provides the opportunity to have that connection, to have those conversations, to build that relationship, and to build that trust. So I think if we do our job right, that we easily combat those sort of arguments just because of those things.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that you've got to live with the fact that there's a natural tension between national leaders, be they a king or dictator. Of course, dictators don't have a problem. They control the press. But, you know, before Hitler got total power, the German press wasn't particularly friendly to the National Socialist Party. And Hitler always said, Der Lügenpresse, the lying press. He was the first to say fake news. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is a natural tension, and there should be that. So the most competent presidents have always managed the media.
They've understood that relationship, expect it. A master was Kennedy. You know, he just knew how to handle the press. Mm-hmm. And so, and you have to have a thick skin, and you have to put things in context. And one of the things that I really like about your newspaper, and you might tell us about this, this informal group you have that meets for coffee, there's sort of an advisory board. Explain. I think that's cool, and I want to be a part of that group. What's the membership requirement?
To have about a half hour, an hour of free time and willing to drink a free cup of coffee. That's really what it is.
That's kind of attractive.
That is attractive. Because of some turnover in staff and trying to rebuild some staff over the past several months, we haven't done it recently, but we're hoping to get back to it here within the next month or so. Really, part of what we do as well is reaching out because we think it's important, and I write about this fairly frequently on our opinion page. We want to know what our readers think. We want to know what they like about the paper, what they don't like about the paper. We want to know what stories they like. If they know of a story, if they have something going on in their neighborhood that they think the community should know about or that they think the community would be interested in, we want to know about that. So as part of that effort, we have a advisory board that does meet monthly. And we're always looking to add a couple members to that if you're interested. But we also then do things like coming out and having this conversation with you. We go out to community groups to talk to the Rotarians, to Kiwanis. I've gone out and talked to high school journalism classes. But we also do things like the coffee thing where we basically invite people to come over to Cafe Diem for an hour. And we've kind of tried different times of day to see where we might get the biggest crowd. And that's still very much kind of a test there for us. But we just try to have a casual conversation about everything that I just talked about, you know. So what's on your mind? What do you like? What don't you like? And we're open to criticism. And we need to have that criticism if we're going to grow and get better. And so, you know, I always appreciate people who say, hey, I think you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
But as much as it sometimes stings, I also equally appreciate the people who go, we just don't like what you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Michael, let's say you're talking to a journalism class at Iowa State. How do you present the future of journalism to that person in that class? What do you say to those folks now?
So I'm going to tell you, I have a 21-year-old son that we talked about earlier, and he's been talking about journalism for a couple, 2-3 years as a possible career. He and I just had a long discussion about this. And I told him, I said, be a strong writer, mm-hmm. but more importantly, become a strong multimedia journalist.
Yeah.
Learn how to shoot photos, learn how to shoot video, learn how to produce all those things, because that's where the future of journalism is. And that doesn't mean that newspapers are going away, but print has evolved, as we've all seen, to where really print now has the ability for immediate reporting and really has that immediacy factor now that it didn't have a generation or two ago. Thanks to the internet, thanks to social media, we can go out and capture a video of a fire on Main Street and post it and let people know it's happening. Mm-hmm. We can do that now. We can probably do that better than even the broadcast media to a certain extent because we tell our stories deeper with more context, but we can do it with those multimedia resources. So I really think anyone who's thinking about this, whether you're a high school student or you're a college student and you're already in journalism school, and I hope that journalism schools, and I think for the most part, most of them are teaching this, is it's important to really teach those multimedia skills. But you still have to be a really good, strong writer because that's important. But newspapers will continue to change and evolve. Print will always be here. People always express concern about the future of print. Mm-hmm. It will look different. The Ames Tribune looks a lot different today than it did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yes.
20, 30, 40 years from now, it will probably look equally as much different.
Well, a lot of institutions, including the one we're speaking on today, was prematurely consigned to the grave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, TV came in and radio is going to be a thing of the past. Well, radio will always be here, too, because of its intimacy, its portability. It's in your car. It's on your hip. So radio is in no danger at all. And neither, I think, is print media. The issue really is credibility in the news. Now, as I said earlier, the first question I ask when I see anything on Facebook, and I take all of that with a real cynical attitude, is there an editor? Is someone answering to somebody who makes sure they follow the old who, what, when, why, how, you know, the questions journalists ask? Someone needs to know, I need to know, that there's an editor, that that reporter who composes the story is answerable to, because that's the problem. People can type anything they want and call it news in this social media world.
Well, and I think it's equally important that when people start reading news online through Facebook, or if they click on a link that someone posts on through Twitter, they have to always know the source of that.
Yeah.
Is it a legitimate source? Mm-hmm. Is it a valid source? Because you're right, so many people just post things out there to post things, and there are some organizations that pass themselves off as news organizations, mm-hmm. and they're not. People have to really pay attention that when they watch some of the 24-hour news networks, that they have to be able to distinguish between what's commentary right. and what's objective reporting. And those lines have become so blurred over the past really 15 to 20 years that a lot of people have a very difficult time distinguishing between those two. And I think that's really sad, but it really needs to be important that people understand that.
Well, I think that's the great thing about print media. It's so easily identified. This is the editorial page. When you turn to this page, you know you're getting opinion and not news. So it's easily demarcated,
mm-hmm.
you know, in your print media. But I really think that when you look back on the election in 2016, one of the methods the Russians used was to pose as Americans on Facebook
right.
and plant stories that weren't true. And for people who were not sophisticated, they accept that not only as what they believe, but they tweet it or retweet it to friends, and then it spreads out like a rumor in a small town, you know. And so that really multiplies out to something. By the way, it's station break time. Say that's KHOI.
Michael Crum is our guest. This is KHOI. This is Local Talk Friday. I'm Dennis Hart. He's Paul Wilson.
Wilson.
And between
yes.
us is Michael Crum, the editor of the Tribune. Stick around. We will be right back. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Local Talk Friday. I'm Dennis Hartz, 36 minutes after the hour on this Friday. And we have Susan Gwiazda with us now, the public relations manager for the City of Ames. And Michael Crum, the editor of the Ames Tribune, is staying with us. It's a pleasure having both of you here. Susan, welcome.
Good morning. It's great to be here. It's always fun to share with you some of the things going on at the City of Ames.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you kick us off here? What are the big things happening? And Michael's going to stick around. Paul and I will be listening here. What have you got coming up?
Well, as you know, we are just wrapping up Rummage Rampage at the Ames Intermodal Facility. That is a 9-day-long event this year that is designed to keep usable items out of the landfill. I believe that we saw you there recently.
I was indeed a volunteer on Sunday, and I have to tell you, Susan, I was in charge of weighing the items that came in, the small items. I thought the small items might be a little smaller. They turned out to be sometimes 30, 40 pounds, and I'm lifting this up to this small little scale. It was a lot of fun. People really responded. They donated a lot of stuff on Sunday.
It's unbelievable. We're still doing the calculations, but we are well over $25,000
in
donations. That money then goes back to the 22 volunteer organizations and the nonprofits who sent people to work this event. 9 days takes a lot of people, and there are a lot of Ames residents volunteering their time to work at this event, and in the end, the proceeds go back to those organizations.
And let's be clear, this is the last day to donate, as I understand, but tomorrow you can buy, and the price is right.
Oh, tomorrow is the half-price day, and we are really expecting a large crowd, so you'll want to get there early. So today, Friday is the last day to donate. We're there from noon to 6 at the Ames Intermodal Facility, 129 Hayward. Tomorrow, Saturday, let me get this right, August 2nd?
Yes. Today is August 2nd.
Okay, August 3rd. We're just talking about how I'm losing track of time. Saturday, August 3rd, is the half-price day. We really need to move merchandise out of the ramp. It needs to return to a functioning public parking ramp. And so all the furniture, small appliances, all those heavy boxes you weighed, all that stuff has to go.
And the reason we weighed them, just to clarify, is to find out how much was being kept out of landfills, right?
Absolutely. So last year in 2018, we diverted 50 tons of material from the landfill, and we raised $18,000. That was 2018. In 2019, we are over 25,000, and we're not even to the last couple of days. And we think that we'll have diverted at least as much materials.
Michael was shaking his head in wonderment at that $25,000. That's really a great number. And this is
a big
great
number.
And
I'll tell you what, and I'm just going to kind of use this as a springboard into a larger conversation, because I see that you also have something about the SunSmart project. We had a story in today's paper about the SciRide grant to buy some electric buses. The city really is making big strides towards sustainable toward sustainability and trying to reduce its carbon footprint. And do you care to talk at all a little bit about that, Susan?
I absolutely do. Thank you for bringing up the $1.6 million transit grant that we received recently to buy battery-operated electric buses. We are making a lot of commitment to sustainable and renewable energy. We just sent out an RFP yesterday for a greenhouse gas inventory. That would be the first step. We're looking at a consultant to help us identify the community's carbon footprint. I know a lot of individual companies, residents, look at their own carbon footprint. This is looking at the carbon footprint of the Ames community. And that is typically a greenhouse gas inventory is typically the basis for a climate action plan, which we anticipate the council moving forward to approve maybe sometime next year. Would be a plan. Okay, you've identified where you are. You have established a baseline of carbon. What's your plan to reduce that carbon footprint? How can we help create together a healthier environment? And what is our individual and collective responsibility to the earth? And I think all those things are really, really important concepts to think about. So that's sort of the step there. A lot of the things that we do at the City of Ames look towards the future. And when we make equipment purchases, we look at things like, okay, how much does this equipment cost to run? But what's its long-term operational costs? And does it make sense to invest when there's biofuels, hybrid engines? Does it make sense to invest now in something that might cost us less over the long haul?
You know, Paul and Michael, one of the interesting things is that the city has just made a major commitment towards solar with the SunSmart project. This was a concept. I mean, people were buying solar packs. The solar packs are not really at your house. You're buying a concept of a solar farm down near the airport. In the future, maybe getting a buck or two back a month on your bill. And yet, there was tremendous public support for this concept, not a physical plant or anything like that, not a physical thing in your house, on solar, the future of the community being solar. Talk about that, Susan.
Yeah, that's been really interesting. That whole project, SunSmart Ames, a community solar farm, was a grassroots effort that came to us from the public. People said, I live in an apartment, or I don't know that I'm going to be here in 5 or 10 years. But I'm really, really interested in renewable energy. And we explained to people, you know, we have a unique process here with our waste energy facility. We are doing things with refuse-derived fuel. So we use garbage to produce energy. We also have an investment in wind. We have 35 megawatts in a solar or in a wind farm northeast of Ames. But that was nice. People like that. But they said, take it another step. Let's look at solar. And so for those people who don't want to invest in solar in their own property or can't for whatever reason, SunSmart Ames was kind of the compromise. Okay, let's build a community solar farm, 2 megawatts, in the community. You can see it, and you can basically subscribe, buy in, purchase part of that energy. And we had a lot of response to that. And then when things sort of stalled out and we said, you know, we had a lot of initial real strong support, and then it kind of stalled, and now we're kind of curious, are people really interested in this? We've had surges of interest again, and we are continuing to subscribe to those solar panels. They're still available, and we'll continue to work until we have 100% of those sold.
Well, it's an act of faith, because if you don't quite meet the standard where you thought you wanted 80%, okay, it wasn't quite met, but we're going to do this based on our faith that this will flesh out. And so that's another thing about Ames and your and the folks who had leadership in this project, an act of faith. We're not quite there, but we're confident we'll get there because people believe in this project, and we just sense that this is part of the future. So that's a compliment to all the people involved, that they made the right choice, that it's backed by people right here in town.
And the city residents have a big decision to make, and I know you were going to talk about this, Susan, on September 10th. Get all of us involved in this conversation. The vote on the Healthy Life Center bond issue. $29 million, the biggest single bond, non-school bond, that the city's ever voted on. Talk about that one, Susan.
Yeah, that's a really exciting project that's coming up. As you know, in Ames, we are not served by like a YMCA or a community center like other communities have. We also have an extenuating circumstance in that our only indoor pool, which is up at Ames High, will be coming down. It's at the end of its useful life. It's over 50 years old. That pool will be demolished in 2022 with the construction of the new Ames High School. So we also have several longstanding community entities that looked at, is there a partnership opportunity here? Do we have some goals that could work together with Mary Greeley, Iowa State University, DMAC, Story County, City of Ames, and Heartland Senior Services? We looked at sort of big picture ideas and goals, and the Healthy Life Center was born from those discussions. It is an indoor aquatic center. It is a walking track. It's cardio and rehab. It is adult daycare. It brings together a lot of entities working with cross purposes under one roof, a kind of one-stop shopping concept. The idea that we put everything together because there's some cost savings in putting everything together rather than building 6 individual buildings. We put everything in one place, a relatively central location. on property that was public land and is being given to us and is big enough to accommodate a building of this size. And there you have the Healthy Life Center. It's a concept that we want input on. We're asking people to vote on it. If you think this is something that would be positive for the community, September 10th is your date. If you're not in favor of this, September 10th is your date. We need to hear from people to make the plans to go forward or to not.
I think the strength of this is what you point out. It consolidates a lot of things that so far Ames lacks or will lack with the demolishing of the pool. And it also serves all ages. You know, you talk about the young people, people who are older. I like the adult daycare would be there, all these rehabilitation services, all kinds of adult conditioning and physical opportunities for people of all ages. And it makes a lot of sense. The only resistance probably would be the dollars. You know, you're talking about a large bond issue. So I hope that people are informed, first of all, and a good job has been done to promote this thing and answer questions people have that are dubious about it. Because, you know, number one, you always have groups of people who resist change. And number two, everyone's cost conscious. I can understand that. But, of course, you have to look at the future. You have to look at the fact that it's not just youth-centered or any particular age group. It's truly a community thing. And the land's already acquired. So, you see, it's a question of building it. And if you build it, they will come. I think I remember a movie like that.
About a baseball field in Daniel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Now, Susan, can you talk about the tax impact? Do you have those numbers in front of you?
I do. So if you are a property owner in Ames, a residential property owner, you're looking at $44 per year per $100,000 assessed value. Mm-hmm. So if you have a $200,000 assessed home, you would be paying $88. You just do the multiplication.
And Dennis, how much do you and I spend in coffee over at Cafe Diem every month?
Probably $88 a
Probably
month,
Probably about $88
right?
a month.
Yeah.
But and I think the Ames Tribune came out, so I don't want people to think that I'm speaking out of turn here. The Ames Tribune came out in favor of this project months and months ago, and we'll write another editorial in favor of it coming, you know, before September 10th. But I think people saw that the amount of the bond issue balloon, if you want to use that word, from like $17 million to $29 million. And right. I think that's going to be a challenge because perceptually that's a huge jump. But it's important for people to know the relatively small cost it will be to them for this project to become a reality. And I think that's really important.
Now, this one takes 60%.
It does.
Voter approval, which is a tough nut to crack in many cases. I don't want to be a naysayer on this. If it did not get on September 10th, 60%, what does the city do next? Do we come back with another proposal, a less expensive proposal? What happens next?
You know, I think at this point we are just going day by day. This is the proposal that we have forward. We don't have another proposal in our back pocket. So we'll see what community support is to this, and then we'll you know, a new day will dawn, and we will go forward. I had a couple of things I just wanted to make on this. $29 million is a huge number. Mm-hmm. It is, I think people need to understand again, 40% of this facility is funded by the partners. So the citizens are not being asked to foot the entire bill. So money is being put in on your behalf. It's an investment where you put in a dollar and somebody else is putting in 40 cents. So that works out. That's not a bad deal. The other thing is, and I think this one is often forgotten in the discussion, a lot of concern about deficits, that this is an operation that will run a deficit. I have to say, of course, it will run a deficit. The Ames Public Library runs a deficit. Our park system runs a deficit. I don't know that people realize it or remember the current indoor pool runs a $100,000 deficit a year. that's an existing deficit. If pools made a lot of money, we'd all be opening pools. Yeah. Recreation does not always pay for itself. When governments step in and provide a service, it's often because there is no incentive for a private group to do it. Pools are notoriously expensive. There's a lot of energy that goes into keeping them functioning. So when you have an indoor aquatic center with a therapy pool and a lap pool and a zero-depth playground area, mm-hmm. you have a lot of square footage. This is a big facility. It will require a lot of energy and a lot of maintenance. And then there's the lifeguards and the upkeep. So we have that situation right now with the Ames Municipal Pool where it takes a lot of energy to keep that facility going. And it's not very energy efficient. We have an opportunity here to build something new.
Is this going to be how big an image builder would this Healthy Life Center be? One of the arguments in favor of it is that in order to attract young people to Ames to work in this very high-tech and very smart area, you need to have an amenity like this. You need to have something like this. Susan and Michael both address this. Susan, in terms of the perception of the community from outside, is this a big deal?
I think it is. I remember moving to Ames, it's been 15 years now, and if you bring young children into this community and it's winter in Iowa, you're limited in what kind of recreational opportunities you have. I look at a facility like this with a two-story indoor playground, a recreational component with the aquatic center, the track, the idea, as you've both mentioned, of intergenerational use, that my children and their grandparents could come to something like this and all find something that would be helpful for all of them. The idea that we're recruiting a new workforce to come to this community, that maybe bringing parents or children, that's happening more and more frequently. Grandparents are mobile. They're moving to places to be closer to their families, and they want to see what a town offers them. So we're not only seeking to attract millennials to Ames, but we're a retirement mecca as well, and we need to have those amenities that people really have grown to expect and help them lead healthier lives. So, this is, I'm a fan of this project. But I just want people to be educated about what it is and how the money will be spent and what the financial impact is on them. And then I want people to voice their thoughts on that.
Michael, the Trib is supporting this. Why are you supporting this?
For, I think, everything that she just said. I mean, we think it's a good project. We think it's a solid project. We would probably argue that against that belief that there's already services in town, private services that provide some of these amenities. I think the strength of this project is the diversity of it and the partnership that's behind it and bringing together that multi-generational experience with the Heartland Senior Services, the rehabilitation centers, the indoor playground. I mean, all those things, plus the things that people haven't mentioned yet, which I understand the concerns maybe that some people have, but things like the demonstration kitchen. Mm-hmm. People can talk about that from many different perspectives, but in today's world where people want to eat healthier and they want to learn more about nutrition, this provides a place in Ames that currently really doesn't exist to provide that. If you are going to be a grandparent and you have your kids for the day and you want to go here, I'm just guessing at this, you might run out of gas before they do. There's going to be the cafe coffee shop area where you can hang out with friends until your kids are ready to leave. I mean, so there's so many different amenities and elements to this that I think it is a win-win. I think it is a draw for the community. I think for people who come here with their families, for a job interview or whatever the situation may be, if it's a difference between saying let's live in Ankeny because maybe Ankeny has something that Ames doesn't, and let's live in Ankeny but work in Ames, this could be the tipping point that causes them to actually buy and live here.
Susan, we have about 90 seconds left. You have some other things you want to talk about here, I think.
Oh, I just want to remind, I think we talked about it last time, that we have introduced a new food waste diversion program, a composting program for people who don't want to compost in their own yards.
Yep.
It's a pay-as-you-compost program where you can purchase into it, buy a bucket and compostable bags from the city of Ames, and then bring your compostable product in when your bucket's full. I bought a bucket a couple of weeks ago, and it's still not full. And so it's a punch card system, $20 to buy in, $10 to refill your punches. We've had really nice conversations around it. It is a pilot project, so people have questions. They can get more information at cityofames.org/FWD. That's food waste diversion. So that's coming up, or ongoing. That's a 12-month pilot project. Coming up is, I just want to remind everybody that it's almost Iowa State football season time.
Amazing.
The first game is August 31st. The Ames City Council recently passed what we're calling a game day parking ordinance. This increases the fines if you park illegally in the neighborhoods around the stadium. So in the past, if you parked illegally, and it really does create kind of a danger for those neighborhoods, vehicles cannot get through the streets. If you park illegally, it'll cost you $40 this year. So we're trying to encourage people to find legal, safe parking, to not put our neighborhoods in danger, to be a good visitor or a good guest to our community. And yet we also want people to know, look, those parking fees have increased. We don't want anybody to be surprised by this. So we're going to put up a lot of signs that say, game day parking, your ticket will be double.
Wow. Paul, we're out of time. This has been the smartest conversation I can remember.
I've loved every minute of it. When you look back on this center
great.
They want to build, or any of the things that Susan talked about, my theme statement is, what price do you put on quality of life?
Yeah.
Right? Come on now.
$40 ticket fine would pay for a lot of the increase on your property right there. If this thing goes through. Michael Crum of the Ames Tribune, the editor, Susan Gwiazda of the City of Ames, I want to thank both of you for staying with us, being with us on this Friday. We've got to do this again. You have been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Local Talk also airs today at noon and 5 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And if you can hear a recording of this show later today at khoifm.org, as well as finding links to guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of the Very Great Kate Shelley. Local Talk's a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you and join the Local Talk team.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Have a great weekend.